bloody blue bottle in the room.
Bloody hell. Oh, God.
Oh, come on, mate. He's a big, fat, noisy bugger as well. Come on, out you go.
Can I say, a little fact about Mike that people probably don't know is that...
I wish the listeners could see this.
Ben, I don't know if you know this about Mike. He absolutely hates flies.
Really?
Is that right?
In a way
I loathe them.
It's so beyond... It's beyond the normal.
Of any other creature.
Look at him. So, listeners, you have to imagine this. Mike, he's done the classic. He's rolled up a piece of paper. But every muscle, every sinew is popping on him, isn't it? You can tell through his shirt.
Yeah, he's really is. He's kind of... he's in this weird stance where he's like... It's like a muscle stance. He's ready to pounce.
Sort of 80s military action hero. He's closed the door. He's just 100% focus. He's swashing around.
Right, that's the only pass that blue bottle's getting off me. He's out of the room.
Oh, you've got him out of the room?
I've closed the door. I've closed the window.
But he's still in your house, Mike. He's still in your house that you bought. He's on your property.
That fly is trespassing.
He is as well.
He's in your airspace.
Yeah, well, I've made it clear to him, I think, if he doesn't make it out of the toilet window by the time we finish this recording, then he's toast.
Mike, in terms of flies, how many kills are you on now? Do you know?
Oh, it's international tribunal levels, I would say.
Yeah, it's a pogrom. It would have to be described as a pogrom now, wouldn't it? By any international court.
I do. I think I have great sympathy for... I mean, even slugs, which are gross, I understand they have a purpose, right?
So yeah.
The bin man of the forest.
Yes.
You know, eating your dog's shit so you don't have to.
Yeah, just like any bin man. Eating household waste.
But flies. No one has yet given me a decent reason why we really need blue bottles in particular.
Well, the trouble with flies is, in terms of people justifying their existence, is... They get stuck in that logical loop with spiders, don't they? Because people slag off spiders and then someone goes, oh, yes, but they eat flies, don't they? So
yeah.
In a way, the purpose of flies is to feed spiders, but the only purpose is...
So if we just had no spiders or flies...
Get rid of both. I mean, that's...
I'm happy with spiders. You won't see me disrupting a cobweb. I see a cobweb in the house.
Sure, I've never seen you do that.
No, exactly.
No, your house is absolutely full of cobwebs. It's quite creepy.
It's horrifying, yeah.
And especially when Mike's wearing his old cobwebby wedding dress that he wears when he's hanging out in the house. It's quite weird, isn't it?
He will not sell that wedding dress. Will you, Mike?
No.
So what is the point of flies? If we were talking now to a fly expert from University College London who was coming on to tell us why flies are actually vital, what would they say?
I bet they would say two things. I bet they would say partly nourishment for birds and other fauna. Mm. Fine.
Of course.
I'll put a bird table up, give them some seed. Tick. Covered. No longer an issue. And I bet the other reason would be something along the slug, kind of cleaning up putrid stuff, in which case just leave it to the slug, mate. Or just get a mop and some soapy water, you know.
if we all just muck in,
there's other solutions.
Yeah,
I don't think they've got any unique things that they're providing personally.
Okay, what are you feeding an iguana?
Mouse.
Or rice cakes?
Yeah, rice cakes would do.
What's wrong with rice cakes?
Chocolate mousse.
Probably chocolate mousse might be a bit too sugary for them. Maybe on a weekend, blow out on the weekends.
I think if you just lob an M&M past an iguana, its little tongue will shoot out and grab it, won't it? I imagine.
I assume so, yeah.
Unless it's one of those prima donnery ones that, you know, will only eat minstrels or whatever.
Well, unless it's got a sort of red-green colour blindness or something, you might have to make sure that it's the blue ones or something they can see.
Yeah.
I don't know much about the vision of an iguana.
Well, that's why the Aerosmith didn't have red M&Ms in the rider, because they were checking it at their iguana.
Exactly.
So. Or was it brown M&Ms? I can't remember.
Also, wasn't it Mariah Carey?
Well, no, Aerosmith were chucking M&Ms at Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey only eats blue M&Ms.
All we know is that there was an iguana somewhere and it might have been somewhere near a gig.
Now, I thought Mariah Carey only ate blue M&Ms or something.
Well, that's her only food stuff that she eats, full stop.
The secret to her success. Yeah, because the blue M&Ms, they're full of roughage and vitamins and minerals.
Well, they've actually got all your food types, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but the point is, Mike absolutely loathes a fly, don't you? But you've got respect for spiders. I've
got respect for, and I don't think I'm a particularly squeamish person. Mm.
Mm. Also, Mike, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when you are troubled by a fly, you become a character from a sort of music hall. You become a very sort of, you start sort of like channeling a very old form of sort of theatrical sort of clowning. Or something.
Oh, you little flying bastard. Here he comes, little boy. Roll up my newspaper, spat him on the wall. Dippy-dippy-doo.
I do accidentally hit a lot of people across the side of the head with planks when I'm trying to kill a fly. That's true.
No, but it's just there's something about the man pursuing the fly that's troubling him, that's really just feels very, very classic, very old, very old.
A classic act of the old Parisian dance hall.
Exactly. You'd get a woman doing the dance of the seven veils and then the mustachioed man being troubled by a fly.
Well, this goes all the way back to Eclubides.
It does, Eclubides.
An ancient Greek playwright and poet, and the story of Hermanos.
Yeah.
And the fly.
The man who was told at young age by the Sphinx that he would at one point have sex with a fly.
That's right.
And also that he would at another point kill a fly. And that
and it might be the same fly. It
could be the same fly. And it's an extraordinary story how he ends up accidentally killing a fly.
Yeah.
Thinking it's his dad. It's an incredible coincidence. He thinks he's killed his dad, who he hated.
But it turns out it's the fly he shagged a couple of nights beforehand.
Turns out it's the fly.
He was only coming to see him because he'd left his phone around. The fly's trying to return it.
Yeah, it was an early phone. It was a shell, a seashell. Obviously, it was a great ancient Greece.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, it was a seashell.
Seashell with a string on it.
You can only take calls, and they were only from the sea.
Yeah. You're right, Henry. It did look on. We're recording this on Zoom, and it did look like an early silent movie.
Silent movie. That's the stuff you'd expect. The piano. You could imagine the piano sound.
Well, everyone's out of the house, so no one's in. I mean, normally I would get one of the families to play a bit of honky tonk piano in the background.
Yeah, normally one of your daughters would be honky tonking it, wouldn't they, on the piano?
Yeah, and our sort of rickety old second hand upright that we got downstairs.
And then you'd have Mike running around. You just imagine him black and white, and then slightly sped up, just a little bit quicker than he was actually running around with the roll up paper. Yeah. And then occasionally a close up on his face, which is Mike's face, but just imagine lots and lots of makeup somehow. Do you know what I mean? So the eyebrows are all sort of makeup, the moustache is makeup, and that sort of comical evil eyes just darting left and right, and that comically evil facial expression.
I do shake my fist a lot.
Shaking his fist. And then you get a close-up of the fly, who up close is sort of beautiful.
Playing a tiny violin.
Playing a tiny violin. And it's a sort of beautiful woman with a fly outfit. I don't know, but it could be that there's some sort of reconciliation and perhaps a love affair. And then the curse has come true.
You know that close-up thing with old films, slightly less old films, say like from the 40s, and they'll be like, it'll be shot normally and they'll be talking in a room, and then they'll cut to the female lead who'll be saying, Geoffrey, I'm so glad you came back. And she'll be in like completely different lighting.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And like really soft focus and like almost looks like she's somewhere else.
Yeah.
What? How did they sort of feel like they could get away with that? It looks, to my modern eyes, very, very strange. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know, but I don't know if that's just because they hadn't worked it all through yet. I don't know if they hadn't quite cracked it, or if they were trying to make sure that different stars had different levels of light.
It's true that when you had that close-up, especially the star female lead, it would just be the softest, most flattering, I suppose what they thought was the most flattering light.
Yeah.
But it just looks incredibly soft and glowy and like, oh, Geoffrey. And it's like, what's wrong with your face? Your face is, we need to get you to A&E now. We need to get you to A&E now. Now. Your face is glowing. But Geoffrey, I thought we were going to run away together. We will, but we can get to Hammersmith in about, if we get an Uber, we can get to Hammersmith in 50 minutes. We need to get you in A&E.
They've got a special radiation suite, I think. It's probably the best place to go.
They've got the radiation suite. But we were having such a wonderful time. Doesn't matter. Look, I know it's going to be, no one wants to go to A&E. There'll be drunk people. There'll be weirdos. It'll be grim. It's uncomfortable.
If we leave it too long, you're going to start melting and then it's too late. Do you understand me?
We need to get you looked at.
Geoffrey, is it true that you've been fucking a blue bottle?
I mean, and also, it would flummox doctors, wouldn't it? That glowing face. What would you do? Mm. Mike, did you ever see anything like that in your time?
Did you ever see any old starlets come in?
With a black and white face?
Yeah, we saw a couple of silver screeners, sure, back in the day. But you needed very, very rigorous specialist training to get involved with that. So, I mean, I'd just be in the background doing a bit of documentation. Yeah. But you've got to get the proper hazmat suits on.
Well, they're hazmat suits where, from the outside, you look then like Clark Gable, don't you?
So that you can interact.
That's right. You need some radiation-proof blusher and toner, obviously. And just a very big bucket of icy water as well. Cool them down.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, that's the problem.
Because Golden Age of Hollywood face is, it's not a common disease, but it is a serious disease where your entire head from the neck up becomes shades of sort of grayscale, shades of black and white.
With really, really lovely twinkly eyes.
Well, you say lovely twinkly eyes, but when it's day after day, it's not...
It ruins marriages.
It ruins marriages.
Because, partners can't sleep.
Because the eyes are twinkling.
Because there's this brilliant orb of light next to them in bed.
The accent gets annoying. Oh, Geoffrey.
Did you get that cereal that I like? Did you get the cereal that I like?
It's too much.
It's too much in that voice.
First thing of the day, you can't get changed in your bedroom because you're sort of silhouetted. Your naked body is silhouetted by your partner's face against the blinds. It's embarrassing. Yeah. So it's a social disease as much as a physical one, of course.
And sometimes the most humane thing to do is actually just to hire a black and white sort of villain with a long twiddly moustache.
To tie them to a train track.
And just let the train network take its course.
Yeah, as long as that train track isn't under a flight path, of course, obviously, because that light from the ground is going to be very disruptive to pilots.
Well, then you may get a plane landing on them as well, which is overkill.
Is it time to fire up our old friend, Albino Machino?
It could be.
I think
someone knocked at the door. Can I quickly check the door before we do that?
Is that Fly?
That plays Fly with his dad.
Massive 6 foot Fly.
Massive 6 foot Fly with a moustache.
This is from Olana, and she suggests islands.
Islands.
Desert island. Who's lasting the longest? Three of us, we are in a small prop plane, like a Sopwith Camel, that we've stolen from an Air Force museum.
Yeah, we're on the run.
In Hampshire. We're on the run, of course. We are going across the Atlantic. Uh-oh, someone's forgotten to refuel.
Oh.
Henry, that was your job.
So I thought you said defuel. I thought you were worrying that we had too much fuel on board.
It's a fire hazard.
That's
I mean, you didn't even defuel that well because we were able to take off and fly as far as a desert island. So,
well, no, I just thought I can't be. I mean, bloody hell, I can't.
Well, you lose interest, don't you, in tasks like that.
Mike is obviously at the controls.
Yes,
Captain Mike,
old
at the controls.
Gunnar Wozniak,
hubristically. Thinking he can do it before crashing into an atoll in uncharted territory.
He's wearing, because of a mix-up on Amazon, he's wearing a sort of sexy pilot costume. Isn't he?
Three sizes too small.
He's absolutely squeezed into this thing.
Including the goggles.
Terrific
bloody headache by this point.
The goggles are they're way too small for you. They're just clamped around the sort of bridge of your nose, aren't they? And the straps are actually going across your eyeballs. So you've got straps right into your eyeballs.
No one's told me I didn't need them because the plane's got a windscreen. And also, you're fine without.
And you're stubbornly, I think, I paid for these on Amazon. I'm going to bloody wear them.
I'm in the seat behind Mike. I, thinking we had enough fuel to reach America where we were going to claim asylum, have eaten the buffet entirely. So there's no more buffet left. That's gone.
You've eaten the whole buffet.
Henry's forgotten to bring the map. He's supposed to be navigating. So he's in a panic. He's illustrating his own new map. He's just colouring a sheet of paper blue.
By the way, but it's not fair to say I forgot to bring the map. My take on the situation was that from a bird's eye view, from a plane, the world basically is a map. I mean, it's a map.
It's its own map.
It's the map of itself. It's 100% accurate.
You've seen the beginning of EastEnders. That's similar.
You just zoom out.
Exactly. Yeah. You've zoomed out when you're in a plane.
As far as you can tell, as long as we're going over the sea, we're going in the right direction.
And the fact that we can't see land is because Mike hasn't gone high enough.
But I'm trying to avoid radar and albatross. That's why I've got to stay low. I've explained this.
The way I see it is as long as we fly at right angles to the waves, then we're heading towards America because the waves come in from the...
They come from America. Waves come from America, just the same as jeans and sneakers.
Jeans and sneakers and waves. They come from America.
And blockbuster movies.
They're one of their greatest exports. And the waves move across the ocean and they crash or break onto the West
Cornwall,
the west of Britain, Cornwall,
right?
Hence the Gulf Stream, hence Lizard's Point. All those lizards come in on the waves and accumulate at Lizard's Point. Yeah.
Hence the fact the UK is slowly being nudged towards Oslo.
The Oslo nudge.
Inch by inch.
The Vikings' revenge. So obviously Mike turns around and he says, the fuel gauge says we've got no fuel left. Henry, you were meant to refuel. Henry, you explained that you've defueled.
Yeah. I then mentioned that I have heard that you can use piss as fuel. I think I heard that once.
And you having been on a bender the night before, you feel that your piss is most likely to be
dark, frothy, yeah, airplane fuel piss.
I'm chocker with the good stuff.
Yeah.
So you clamber outside.
I clamber out
onto the chassis.
Of the chassis. I find the petrol nozzle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I realise I've forgotten if it's one of those ones that where you need to press a button in the cockpit to release it or not.
But luckily, it isn't, but it does need a key. So you have to then get to back clamber. In and take the key out of the ignition.
Get the key out. So you have to put the thing on clutch. Do you have to put the clutch down?
Put it in neutral.
Put it in neutral. You hoik out the key. Yeah.
Yeah. But luckily, because we're going over the world, there's a natural curvature, so we are technically going downhill. So I can coast for a bit.
Always going slightly downhill because the Earth obviously rotates left to right,
mm-hmm.
Which also creates the illusion of movement. So it's hard to know whether you are moving or if you're on the spot, so, isn't it? It's one of those,
or if we've just stalled.
Or if you've stalled, so you can get a bit car sick. I clamber back to the nozzle. At that point, I forget. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if my piss is unleaded or not.
And if it is unleaded, is it safe to use
at this
E10? Whether or not that level of biofuel is going to harm the engine. Yeah. We point out we're in a crisis anyway. It's probably worth a punt anyway. There's no fuel.
Also, am I one of those 1 in 10 people that still pisses diesel? And is that allowed? Does it comply with ULEZ? Are we in the congestion zone? Probably not. Rule that out.
Shouldn't we all be trying harder for the environment? All these thoughts
racing
through your mind. Have you got time to construct some solar panels on the wings, for example? Ben's got his aviator shades. It's all mirrors, isn't it?
It's all 30 mirrors.
Solar panels? Maybe they'll do the job.
Could we become the first self-sustainable small aircraft hovering on the spot while the world rotates underneath it?
With a constant stream of piss.
Constant stream of piss. Well, drinking water regurgitated from seagulls, right, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as we can turn Mike's very, very tight, sexy pilot's outfit into a seagull costume for me, I could strike up a relationship with other seagulls.
Well, it's reversible, isn't it? It's on one side, it's a sexy airplane captain, and then if you flip it on the other side,
we just have to hope it's
a sexy seagull.
It's a sexy seagull outfit,
and also waterproof.
Yeah. So get the sexy seagull outfit on me, and in theory, I could
tow it.
I could potentially tow it.
Tow it.
It depends how good the seagull outfit is. I mean, if it's one of those ones where you can fly, then I could tow it.
If it isn't, then you could still tow it, but you'd be towing us directly down.
So, yeah, a lot going on.
But what happens ultimately is that it turns out that you can't fuel a plane with piss. But that comes as a surprise to us all.
I can't fuel a plane with piss. And also the nozzle's flown off. I've lost the lid. The lid's flown off.
But not the nozzle. Your nozzle's your old boy, right?
My nozzle!
Your nozzle's your old fella. That's flapping about at terrific speeds.
Like a windsock.
My nozzle has got that effect that you get on James Bond's face when he's... trying out a centrifuge machine. That's what's happening on my human nozzle.
I'm having a hard time picturing that, Henry, but sure.
Meanwhile, we're getting closer and closer to sea level. We see there is a coral atoll that we could land on, but hang on, who's already on there? It's bloody Amelia Earhart. She's there. We're the first person to see her in decades. She won't let us land. She just waves the bird at us. Get stuffed. This is my desert island. We've got to find the next desert island, which is another mile away. Disaster.
Absolute disaster.
The only hope now is that I can skim it. I can skim the plane.
Well, I'm using the seagull outfit. I've still got a little bit of buoyancy from that.
So Mike's naked?
Mike's naked.
Apart from the goggles.
And it's not lost on Ben that Mike is in great shape at the moment. It's not lost on him, despite the crisis that's going on.
Yeah, he's feeling a bit body shamed, having just eaten all of the travel buffet that we brought with us.
Ben's feeling a little bit body shamed, though. But what you both are doing is pushing up on the lid or roof of the plane.
Yeah, it's the emergency anti-gravity measure.
The anti-grav measure. Obviously, it can't last forever. Otherwise, that's how planes would all work. But it does. It can.
Well, you lose strength eventually, don't you? You tie, and that's why planes land.
You lose strength, otherwise it would work. But you're able to push up a bit. That keeps us just above sea level. And eventually we skim to quite a surprisingly...
We skim. We've got to make sure that we try and rotate. We've got to spin it, because obviously you're skimming a stone. You want it to have a bit of spin on it, right? So at the last minute, we all quickly swivel to the left. So the whole plane is just spinning. Yeah.
And it skims like a stone skimmed by a schoolboy.
Exactly. And it's probably a seven bounce skim, I reckon. Ooh. We only make five bounces before we crash in hard into the side of a sperm whale.
And with each of those bounces, Ben's regretting eating that buffet more and more, isn't he? Each bounce is like, oh, bloody hell. I shouldn't have eaten all five of the Scotch eggs.
Also, the very quick change in atmospheric pressure is doing terrible things to my gut. So I'm in absolute turmoil.
Digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
Ben is basically, to put it charitably, he's shitting out of every orifice, isn't he? And hard.
His ears have popped. As has his small intestine. Yeah,
everything's popping. Everything that's poppable can pop. He's like human bubble wrap. It's just...
He comes to rest in the side of a sperm whale about 150 yards from land, from our unoccupied desert island. And at that point, we've just got to swim for it.
Luckily, because of the pressure, the extreme pressure change and how fast it was, Ben's belly button has completely prolapsed out.
Turning it into like a dorsal fin.
Also, the pressure change has also sort of crushed you to about a quarter of your ordinary size.
Yeah.
So Henry's is almost pocket sized.
I'm almost pocket sized.
But Mike, you're unbothered by the pressure change because you're in such good shape.
Mike's in such good shape.
Because I've been eating my greens, I'm unaffected by atmospheric pressure changes.
So my question was going to be, which of us survives the longest on the island? But so far, I'm shitting from every orifice and my small intestine has exploded. So I imagine I'm going to expire fairly quickly.
Ah, you'd think that, wouldn't you? But the effluent coming off you attracts shoals of nourishing fish. So by the time we make land, you essentially have a huge shoal of cod and haddock and bream.
Under my command.
Under your command. And they understand that they can feed from your leakages, because your leakage is never going to stop now.
Right.
That's perpetual.
There's no medical centre.
Right, sure.
And they understand that you occasionally cream off a couple of the smaller ones.
Yeah, for some omega-3. But Mike, you're a former doctor. I would feel like, I know that you're not a practicing doctor. Yeah. If you practice as a doctor now, it would be, I believe, illegal, would it?
Yes. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Sure, right.
I'm no longer registered. Yeah.
But I still think if we were in a desert island situation, we'd be looking to you for medical advice, I think.
Yeah, and I would take that need and I would use that as leverage to put myself forward as the natural choice for leader of the island. And I'd probably initially be quite benevolent. I'd be autocratic, but I'd be benevolent. But I think I'm not very good in the open sun. I get quite tetchy if I'm out in the open sun too much. So I think probably by mid-afternoon, you'd start to feel it. You'd start to feel the wrath.
Right. So we're not even lasting out the full day then before we start collapsing.
I don't think so. Before I've sentenced one of you to death.
Before what turns out is the very, very, very delicate social sort of norms and threads that hold our relationship together, the three of us, just dissolve completely.
It's falling apart in seconds. Yeah.
And it's full on, Mike, you've just painted your face with Ben's blood by about tea time on the first day.
Yeah. And I'd probably be going after you, Henry, because probably jealousy, because once we'd landed on the island, I'd noticed that you were trying to strike up a relationship with the only wild pig that lived there. Yeah. And you'd bond quite quickly, and Ben's got his fish.
Yeah. I've got thousands and thousands of bream and cod.
You've got the wild pig.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling a bit jealous of the whole thing. I'll probably take it out on Henry first.
It feels as if we've very naturally split up. I become a sort of lord of the seas. Henry becomes a kind of prince of the land. Which leaves you with the birds of the sky.
I am the fallen pilot, the fallen prince of the skies.
Exactly. Mm, you're an Icarus-like figure. Tragic.
Yeah.
And then birds peck out your eyes.
And then birds peck out his eyes.
Birds peck out my eyes. But I'm still in charge because I've managed to undermine the confidence of both of you enough by this stage. And I set you to work trying to build me a new one-seater aircraft.
You bastard.
Assuring us that... it's okay. It's a one-seater, but I'm pretty sure both of you will be able to get on as hand luggage. And Ben and I are buying this.
Particularly because you've shrunk because of the pressure changes. And also Ben, has leaked so much by now. He's more a sort of shroud, really, than a man. But meanwhile, we're there for the long run, it looks like, right? Building that plane isn't going to be tricky because all we can build the plane out of is... hopefully, other bits of plane that might fall out of the sky. There's no other materials. Mm. So we've got to establish a community. We've got to establish, how to feed each other, toilets, where's the lounge?
And I know it's a little bit awkward to think about, but I think we at some point we would have to think about reproducing together.
Yes, even though there's no There's no indication whatsoever that the rest of the human race is under threat at all.
No.
Because we haven't escaped an apocalypse.
No, that's true. That's a good point.
And we've seen no mushroom clouds on the horizon. Everything seems to be unchanged and presumably people are just getting on with their normal lives. We've possibly made page 7 in a local newspaper based in Hampshire about a missing aircraft. We decide to repopulate the Earth.
Just in case.
Just in case there has been an extinction level event exactly. while we're away.
The only ovary within 1,000 miles is the 150-year-old ovaries of Amelia Earhart as well on the nearby island. And yeah. You know,
yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
She ain't giving them up. No. She's not interested. No. She sent us one smoke signal so far. And even though we don't read smoke signals, it's clear that the message is fuck off.
Yeah.
We're actually quite impressed at how she's managed to convey that with smoke.
There was no subtext with that smoke, was there? It was pretty clear. Genuinely.
Yeah.
How do you think we'd get on this island?
Oh, I think I'd eat you, Henry, okay. within a day.
Yeah.
Cards on the table, yeah. You know.
Even before you'd really established for sure whether or not this was indeed a desert island or...
Well, I get crotchety if I get hungry.
Yeah.
I don't want to put Ben through that.
And if it subsequently became revealed that it was actually a peninsula, it was actually... we're actually still in Cornwall.
It just gets slightly cut off this isthmus of land.
It's an isthmus.
It's cut off at high tide.
2 hours a day. Yeah.
Just 2 hours a day.
Even then you can wade over because it's only knee deep.
And the visitor centre is on the isthmus, so...
It's visible, yes, yeah. And we'll even, you know, the granary-style cafeteria, there will even give you credit if you haven't got any cash on you.
Yeah, they're very easygoing.
You can get a soup and a crusty bun.
Yeah, but that wouldn't cross your mind, was it, as you...
Well, I'd want to think straight. I can't think straight if I haven't got fuel on board.
But also, if Mike went into that cafe without having eaten you, Henry, if we went in hungry, he'd probably over-order, wouldn't he, Mike? You'd probably order...
I would over-order, yeah.
A full Plowman's, a few scones.
I'd get the soup and the sandwich as well.
Well, you never go into a cafe on an empty stomach, do you, Mike? It's one of your it's one of your watchwords. In fact...
I'd be ordering my pudding before I've even had my mains.
Yeah.
You know,
Mike always eats out on a full stomach, don't you? You tell your children, don't you, before you take them out to a restaurant?
We all have a bag. We all have an empty Tesco bag for these occasions, and we fill it up with snacks and biscuits and biltong and fluids so that the biltong expands on our stomachs. And we only let ourselves in the restaurant once those bags are empty.
And because you say to them, you tell your children, don't not snack or you might not ruin your dinner.
Exactly.
And then you get into the restaurant and then you just have some tap water for the table.
Yeah, a little bowl of olives and then we go home.
And at the end, you'll normally explain, we didn't touch the olives. Can we please have a refund on them?
Because for Mike, really, the experience of going to a restaurant is more about being condescending to a teenage waitress, really, than that's the experience he's going for.
Yeah, really, really, nothing gets my juices flowing more than that.
Excuse me, I think this fork is...
this fork has too many tines. Can you take it back, please?
What am I, some sort of tine hoover? What is this restaurant? I thought it was Pizza Hut, not Tine World. Bloody hell. And obviously, you get getting people to list the specials. You like the dessert trolley to come out, don't you?
Yeah, I like to see that early doors.
One of the key experiences is getting the little token so your parking was free. That's a lovely experience you can have.
Using the toilets and then looking at any signed photographs on the walls by sports stars. Yeah.
And hopefully it's a sort of restaurant where you can nick a couple of bog rolls and they're not sort of properly nailed into the side of the wall. Fill my pockets with squeezy soap. Off we go.
And then just sort of loudly tut as you leave. And it's a sort of, it's not aimed at anyone specifically, is it, the tut? It's just a...
Well, the tut says, I'm going straight to TripAdvisor.
So you best not come anywhere near me, otherwise it might get worse. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just Googling TripAdvisor. I'm just going through the FAQs on TripAdvisor to see if it's possible to give negative stars. Good day. And then you leave.
Five black holes. So in real life, as you say, Henry, how would we do? I think, well, what it does is it brings into sharp focus the things that we would have died of if we had been born in the 1500s. So I would sort of have an asthma attack and die within about half an hour. Yeah. Also, currently my glasses keep falling off because I think my nose has become more slippery over time. I don't know what's happened.
Well, eventually your face prescription runs out, doesn't it? It stops being... Yeah. So that's why you have to update it because your face will gradually... Yeah. Yeah, because your face obviously gradually changes shape over the years.
But also, you know, you're both older than I am. Is it true that as you get older, a kind of a heavy grease builds up behind your ears that kind of like slick?
That's right. And that's actually, it's not your nose. It's that grease is leaking down the arms of your glasses onto your nose. That's the problem.
And obviously your ears gradually, just through their own weight, start to become more and more pendulous. It's sometimes referred to as Wogan syndrome. but what happens is, the surest way to age a man, by the way, and it's as sure as carbon dating or the counting of the rings of a felled tree.
Yes.
Is to measure the length between the hole of the ear and the bottom end of the lobe. Because what happens is ears gradually, they just droop like stalactites. Especially, right. Especially male ears, I find. They just get longer and longer and longer. So it doesn't matter how much plastic surgery you have, you'll see someone who's got, you know, that cherubic face of a 12-year-old, but their earlobes are drowned around their ankles. And you know that's probably like a Hollywood star.
You know they've had a bit of work done.
Yeah, so the ears get longer, that affects, I think, how the specs sit on them.
So you think you'd be blinded and winded within no time?
Well, the other day, my glasses fell off into a toilet the other day.
Oh, no.
So they're constantly falling off, and I think on the island, they'd fall off, I'd step on them, and so I'd be essentially then blind.
You'd step on them, you get a tiniest cut in the sole of your foot, into which the unique bacteria that live on this little desert island would creep.
Yeah.
And you'd be consumed by fever. Within hours.
Much like Henry's belief that piss fuels a plane, he would start saying that he needed to piss on my wound. He'd heard somewhere that...
Henry's solution to every single problem in the desert island scenario is piss first, ask questions later. He's got fuel piss, he's got medicinal piss.
Yeah.
He's got nourishing piss.
Spiritual piss.
He's pissed SOS into the sand. Still doesn't understand why no one's come to rescue us.
So yeah, I don't think I'd last long. I'd be blind and wheezy within minutes.
Okay, one thing I'd have is just, I'd want to establish early doors with all of us that I cannot be asked to build any sort of shelter. I cannot be asked. can we just crawl underneath leaves for sleep, please? Like, I mean, if I lay down in between two quite big logs, and then if one of you guys drapes a big leaf over the top, that's like a little sort of coffin-sized, do you know what I mean? It's like one of those Japanese hotels, like one of those mini Japanese hotels. That's how I'd see it.
A capsule hotel.
A little capsule hotel. Let's capsule hotel it. Let's not try and build a proper shelter. It's just not going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
So me and Mike construct a huge palace out of logs and leaves and reeds, which eventually has central heating.
We've got our pagoda at the other end of the island.
Yeah.
With themed levels.
It's based on M&M World in Leicester Square. That's the...
Yes, one of the levels at least is full of M&Ms, which we've just found there. Must have fallen out of some other plane. Got a gaming zone. There's a wet room, a hammock centre.
How does the escalators work? How does that work?
Bamboo.
Oh, bamboo. So versatile, isn't it?
Bamboo, and then we've constructed a little wheel in which the only wild pig on the island is working.
And you've got little speakers and tannoys made out of lost leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And as you come up through the escalator into the entrance porch, it goes, "Welcome to Mike and Ben World."
Exactly.
Well, sometimes it goes, "Henry Packer is approaching. Remind him of his sloth."
Yeah, you'd find that hard, particularly when you come to visit us and we're in the canteen.
Yeah.
You know, because two men can't possibly get through all the food in the canteen. And every day we're throwing away, you know, kilos and kilos of...
Largely bread and butter pudding.
Bread and butter pudding and curries, macaroni cheese. Just chucking it in the sea.
Vegetarian option, which neither of you take, but you make it anyway, and you just chuck it out every day.
We've got to have one.
You've got to have one.
It's
normally a sort of goat's cheese and beetroot tart.
Yeah. Sometimes we'll have a little bit as a starter, but otherwise, we tend to leave it. Yeah.
I could help out in the canteen.
Nope.
But if
you're not allowed in the building.
You could, no.
Because you made it very clear on day one, no shelter.
All you've had to eat are your own fingernails, and you're getting bored of that now.
Getting really, really bored of that.
And we say to you, but what could you possibly offer us in return? And all you've got is piss? I can piss?
Well, I can't do that anymore.
Because you're too dehydrated.
I'm too dehydrated. It's just sort of dust. I've got just dust coming out of both ends now.
So you try and busk, and you set up a stool where you offer to draw caricatures of passers-by in the sand.
Yeah.
Thinking that might be a way of making a bit of money.
Yes.
Because there's only two passers-by ever.
Well, I did do a toucan.
Or did he pay you?
No, he didn't like it.
Yeah.
He left without paying. He thought I'd exaggerated his beak too much.
Even though he should have understood.
As a caricaturist, I've got to work with what's in front of me. Do you know what I mean? Also, he didn't like the fact that I gave him a tiny human body skateboarding.
Yeah, so you're having a shocker.
Strangely, given our M&M's World based pagoda and Henry's caricature station, we're sort of recreating Leicester Square on a desert island.
We are. That's
what mankind does.
And we even managed to create, or you guys did, a sort of cinema out of like bamboo.
Oh yeah, there was a multiplex. Yeah,
a multiplex
with at least 7 different options at any one time.
Yeah, showing the Meg.
The Meg is showing in 3 of the screens. Yeah,
and Passage to India. Weirdly, one of the other ones, because you made an equivalent of the Prince Charles Cinema, which obviously shows
old stuff,
older films.
Yeah,
and your Sing Along a Sound of Music. I mean, I was obviously never allowed in, but
but you couldn't get to sleep during it, could you?
I couldn't get to sleep during it.
So essentially, scientists, when they discover the island in like 50,000 years' time, would discover a perfect replica of London's Leicester Square, but populated by, because of the way evolution's going, of course, crabs.
Crabs.
Just crabs, yeah.
Yeah. And Henry, your only real hope for survival would be that your crab evolution is accelerated somehow.
And it happens while you're still alive, and in one generation.
You wake up every morning hoping that you click your little fingers, your increasingly shriveled fingers together, hoping, are these drying out enough? Are they clacking yet? Are they clacking?
Maybe I can bring it on clacking. I think I'm coming up on crab. I think
maybe the shell is under my skin. You start trying to tear your own skin off to see if there's a shell underneath. It's an absolute horror show, but quite entertaining for Ben and I. As we watch from the 7th floor, from the viewing gallery.
Yeah.
You just need 10p to operate the telescope, and you're away.
And you've got the Burger King and the McDonald's and the Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah. There's like a Cinnabon.
Cinnabon.
We can hit the hut 24/7. It's got a 24/7 Pizza Hut drive-through.
Has it got the half-price ticket hut for the West End?
It does, of course. Because that attracts footfall, and that's what we're hoping to attract. But in the form of rescue footfall.
Oh, I see. Oh, so the idea is if we create a perfect replica of Leicester Square.
If it's appealing enough, if our island is an absolute must-see cultural experience, then sooner or later, some cargo ship's going to turn up. We'll show them the afternoon of their lives and then hitch a ride home. That's the plan.
Although my guess is they'll turn up and it isn't really Leicester Square. It's just a bunch of old crab shells. Stuck together with human feces. And you two in the middle of it, just sort of rocking backwards and forwards.
Just babbling.
Just babbling.
I'll have 2 tickets for Billy Elliot, please.
Enjoying a hive-brain hallucination. And we've actually only been there for 16 minutes.
Can I... excuse me, with the Pizza buffet deal, can I have a chocolate fudge pudding, or do I have to pay for that separately?
Please, I've got to be at Les Mis in half an hour, so please hurry up, please.
It's one of the most shocking sights that helicopter rescue team had ever seen. So much so that they decided...
Just to napalm it.
Speaking of people going mad on an island... I've never read Lord of the Flies. I know you're meant to have done that, but I haven't.
It's really good.
It's really good, and it's worth a read. But equally, by this point in your life, you've probably heard it mentioned so many times in so many contexts that you probably know enough about it.
The main thing about Lord of the Flies is, if you read it, then just occasionally in life, you just go, it's a bit like Lord of the Flies.
It is one of the most invoked books, I think, for that.
Yeah. And you don't need to have read it to do that, I don't think, BP, because you'll know what the deal is by now.
But Ben, you can't just use it willy-nilly. You can't just be watching the Grand Prix or something and say, oh, this is a bit like Lord of the Flies. It needs to have certain types of things need to be happening.
Basically, you either need to tick the island box or the isolation box, I should say.
Yeah.
Or you need to tick the unsupervised group of children box.
Oh, so I bet you're using that quite a lot down the park.
Oh, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone enjoys it every time.
This is like Lord of the Flies. This is like Lord of the Flies. This is like Lord of the Flies. This is a bit like Lord of the Flies. You're like a stuck record, aren't you, comparing things to Lord of the Flies down the park?
Yeah, sometimes I get it wrong. Sure. Sometimes someone's just playing fetch with their dog.
Sometimes it's not really like Lord of the Flies.
Oh, it's like Lord of the Flies. People don't pick you up on it, though. They just walk away.
Well, but that's because they haven't read Lord of the Flies either, so they're not entirely sure there isn't a bit where a man's throwing a stick for his dog.
They go away, and then 3 weeks later, they come back having read it. They're like, oi, you!
That wasn't that much like Lord of the Flies.
That was nothing like Lord of the Flies.
And then the two of you end up getting into a big argument about it, and eventually you sort of go a bit feral. You start living in the park, the two of you. Both.
Oh, can you see what he's doing, Ben?
Sharpening sticks and stuff. Yeah.
And then it's like Lord of the Rings.
And then it's like Lord of the Rings, because one of you thinks that you have got a sacred amulet and that you can bring peace to the kingdom by travelling to the Vale of Mordor. Yeah.
Oh, this is like Lord of the Dance.
It's a bit Lord of the Dances, isn't it? Yeah, that'll happen if... It can happen in a situation where a lot of people are trapped together.
On a hot floor?
Yeah.
In a straight line, but all facing the same direction.
Exactly. Kitchen island.
Oh, yes. You've got a kitchen island, right?
I've got a kitchen island, although it's joined to the wall at one end, so technically it's peninsula. But it is sort of a kitchen island.
Oh, I long for one.
It's a good thing. It is good, a kitchen island.
Yes, that's very smart, isn't it? Hard to know what you can do with your knees, of course, but a very smart bit of kit.
Well, my kitchen island's got an overhang, so you can stick your knees underneath it. It's got the work surface overhangs at one end.
It's all everything. Holy moly.
Holy shit.
Oh, it is... It's a pretty wild feeling, let me tell you. When I get the sun lounger out and lay it down on top of the island,
with
turn the hobs on,
a couple of palm fronds,
dangling from the ceiling. Get the hobs on, Ben, as you say, to get the temperature up. Cocktail in one hand,
rifle in the other,
and obviously a bowl with some keys in it, radio, a couple of onions.
And then you get your wife to release that jar that's full of mosquitoes.
And
it's like you're there.
It's like you're there.
Wherever there is.
Wherever there might be.
What material is the top of your...
It's granite.
Granite?
I think so. Isn't that what the granite work surface?
Oh my God, you live in that absolute luxury, Henry.
It's absolute luxury. It's got a mini wine fridge as well.
What?
My kitchen island's got a mini wine fridge in it, which takes three bottles of wine on top of each other. But I've never managed to get it to work.
That doesn't matter.
The fact is it's...
Visitors see it. That's all that counts.
And they feel that pang of absolute rage. Which is what we all want to create in our friends.
I'm trying to think of classic sort of desert island films. I guess King Kong, is that?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, that's the kind of the island that time forgot.
Oh, yeah, because there's dinosaurs
the island
on it.
The island where evolution has gone differently or whatever, or it's still got... You know what? It's King Kong, in a way. It's quite weird, isn't it? That film's called King Kong, because surely it's the fact there's dinosaurs there is more interesting than there's a massive monkey.
That's such a good point.
Who cares about the massive monkey? There's dinosaurs. Yeah, I know what a monkey is, just bigger than a monkey. I'm not interested. Sorry,
or at least dinosaur. Let's bring that back on the second trip, shall we?
Yeah, so maybe if we come back, it's nice to come back to the same place sometimes because you really get a feel for it. If we come back, we'll visit the monkey. I don't care if the monkey's got is holding a human woman. Don't care. It's a monkey. Who cares? I don't care if you struck up a sort of weird relationship with the blonde lady. It doesn't matter because...
Because there's literally a T-Rex over here.
There's literally a fucking T-Rex, mate. Are you fucking joking? You want us to go and see the monkey in his fucking cave? How much does this fucking holiday cost us? It's a complete waste. You always ruin holidays. What's the fucking point? It's supposed to be relaxing as well. We work all year. It's supposed to be relaxing. Jesus Christ. It's like going to Peru and saying, oh, should we go and visit the subway? Are you joking? A massive... You've heard it's a really big subway. It's one of the biggest subways, isn't it? Yeah, big monkey. Who cares? I can draw a picture of a f***ing monkey right now and hold it up close to my face and it's a big monkey. Oh, great. Now we're fighting the monkey and you want to take it back. You want to take the monkey back to display it to people when there's a f***ing... I can literally see a T-Rex. Just behind you to the left, there's a T-Rex. You want to take the monkey back to America? Are you mad? Sorry, I'm... Piss off. You know what? Sometimes you have to go on holiday to realise that a relationship actually might not be what you wanted. Maybe. I don't know. I'm sorry. Look, let's just both go for a walk separately.
Watch out for the velociraptors, okay? I don't want you getting eaten. I'm cross with you. I don't want you getting eaten.
Yeah, I'm really, really pissed off. But I don't... We'll meet back at the hotel tonight. They're doing the international buffet, aren't they?
They're doing paella. And if we don't get there early, they always pinch all the mussels out.
Someone will pinch the mussels and prawns. So look, let's breathe. Let's spend the afternoon separately. We'll meet. Let's still get to the paella thing at 6:30. Let's just get to the paella thing at 6:30 because. I do basically love you. I love you. Still love you.
Let's go and see the monkey. Come on. Let's go and take that bloody monkey back to America. Let's do it.
Okay, time for your correspondence. Thank you to everyone who sent us emails, and they sent them to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Now, lots of emails this week. We might have to save some for next week because we've got so many, but there's a lot of correspondence vis-a-vis onion crisps.
Oh, really?
Mm.
We've touched on that, we'll start
with Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz writes, "Dear Beans, in last week's episode, you were joking about someone going to the ends of the earth, including Mozambique, Brazil, and Antarctica, to find an onion-flavoured crisp.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to Antarctica, and I asked the electrician where I was working, who had already been there several months, what food he was missing most, given that we had limited food selection. He said, pickled onion monster munch."
Good grief.
Oh, hello.
So there you go. If you go to the ends of the earth, you might not find onion crisps, because they are, in fact, right under your noses in your local Tesco. So they're making the point that onion crisps are not that unusual, really, because they are, well, pickled onion monster munch are a central pillar of British cuisine. So well done, Jazz. Touché.
That's fair, isn't it? I feel hugely undermined.
I've got a couple of little issues there.
Yeah.
So, Jazz, like, you may be some sort of, presumably some sort of expert in climatology or animals or something, to be spending time in Antarctica.
Or someone with a very poor sense of direction.
Or someone with a very poor sense of direction. Or with a dodgy tom-tom.
Mm.
But the issue is, what we were contending or was that crisps tend to not foreground onion as a flavour.
Mm.
Well, no, I think it wasn't just crisps. It was no food goes onion
first. No food.
Yeah.
So here, have they foregrounded pickling?
That's what I would... That's what I think is the case. So... maybe take that up with some of the thousands of penguins that you stare at every day. The other point I would make is that, technically, I'm going to be a bit pedantic, but presumably I don't think you get to work on an Antarctic research station without having an eye for detail. Is Monster Munch a crisp, or is it a starch snack?
What?
I'm not sure if Monster Munch is actually a crisp, because a crisp to me is a very, very thin slice of potato that's been fried and had all sorts of stuff done to it to make it crispy. But Monster Munch is, along with Quavers and Skips, is in that world of, it's just an accumulation of starch molecules.
Who's using the phrase starch snack?
Well, you know, do you want me to go down the garage and pick you up some starch snack? Oh, tell you what would make this lad's night in the pub perfect. We have someone get a couple of bags of starch snacks and open them up in the middle of the table. Yeah? I wonder if... it's quite cool. If Jazz does work in an Antarctic research station, perhaps Jazz can tell us more about what happens there. I don't know, just what's going... What are you doing in Antarctica, Jazz, would be my question. Maybe Jazz can answer. Because Antarctica, I believe I'm right in saying, is a large, inhospitable, sort of very, very cold area that's on the south pole of the Earth. Is that right?
that's the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I was thinking that it was a suburb of Barcelona. I think I've got to mix
up. Antarctica. Have a good time.
Wonderful paella.
Wonderful churros. Oh, yeah. So good. And great, great bars that are open till, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. without an entrance fee, just very chilled out atmosphere.
Yeah, so Jazz, maybe you could tell us whether you're in that Antarctica or whether you're in the polar hell that is the South Pole. So the next, I would say the next piece of evidence for the prosecution on this onion food trial comes not from someone who sent an email, but comes from my very self. I'm about to send you both an image that I captured with my camera at a museum in Estonia last week. Just pressing send.
So the image is it a poster or is it on a TV screen?
It's a TV screen that was scrolling through various events that were happening at the museum.
Either way, it's a promotional image. It's telling us there's an event on the 2nd of October between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. for Onion and Fish Day. Not Fish now, and Onion Day.
Not Fish and Onion Day, Onion and Fish Day.
But not only is it Onion and Fish Day with Onion front and centre, the only image is of onions.
Yes, it's close-up of onions.
Yes, they've put the words Onion and Fish Day over a lovely photograph of various coloured onions and not a fish amongst them. So I think onion is definitely the...
Did you go to Onion and Fish Day, Ben?
No, because it's on October the 2nd. So listeners have still got the opportunity to, if you live in Estonia, do go to the, I think it's called the Tallinn Outdoor Museum or Open Air Museum.
And if you say Pompidou, 20% off, excluding salmon and coffee.
Free onion.
We assume that's universal, don't we? That deal.
See you there.
And it goes on from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. So that's, you could be eating onions and fish for 5 hours.
That's a Saturday as well, so it's very much a family, you know, everyone could turn up.
I mean, one way of doing it is you turn up at 10 a.m, you breakfast on onion, then you walk around, obviously, the onion history section, the fish museum.
You play the fish tombola.
Play the fish tombola. Do the interactive swimming pool full of onions that you can, bob about in.
They've got those mega onions that you can climb in and do sort of zorbing contests.
Yeah, you can zorb in a mega onion. If you've got any very small children and you want, you know, you can leave them in the ball, well, it's like a ballroom full of balls, but it's onions, the onion room, isn't it? They can play in a big sort of onion pit.
Yeah, or the fish pit.
Or the fish pit. Yes, you've got a choice.
It's a great day out.
Such a great day out. Onion and Fish Day.
2nd of October. Get down there. Howard emails, Dear Beans, I thoroughly enjoy all the jingles. Pompidou Centre, Digestive Tract Talk, and the probably now defunct Flightless Bird Attack jingle. I don't think it's defunct. We just haven't...
It'll come back.
Having a little
we'll
break,
be talk-
yeah.
I don't think we have mentioned Flightless Birds this series, but it's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah, you can't force it, though.
It's happening right now.
It's happening right now. In fact, we could
play the jingle.
We could play the jingle.
Okay.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
No, please, not my face!
Careful what you wish for, whoever wrote that email, because sometimes you get it.
Which is what he wanted.
Which is what he wanted. So, but good thing he wasn't careful what he wished for in that case. So actually, just wish away.
Continue to be carefree with your wishes, Howard. Anyway, he writes, but it seems to me you've massively overlooked a jingle that is staring you right in the face. A Royal Talk jingle. I swear, in every episode you bring up the Queen or one of her spawn, and as a mark of respect to the old Queen, surely a new jingle should be added to the roster. It's the least she deserves. All the best, Howard.
I'd agree to that, provided that our listenership promised that when we play it, they stand as they would when they hear the national anthem.
Yeah.
Even if they're not based in the UK.
What if they're on the International Space Station and it's impossible to stand because of the lack of gravity?
Yeah, straight in their bodies.
Yeah.
Straight in the knees.
Yeah.
Straight in the knees in any direction.
Obviously, if that happens during a fire, a crisis up there, that could be...
Oh, if you're in the middle of a drill, fair play, they probably shouldn't be listening to a podcast.
Exactly.
I love the idea of there being a fire on the International Space Station and someone's listening to Three Beans Sat.
Can you turn off the alarms, please? Because they're in the letters section now and I'm nearly finished.
If I could just finish
this
it.
This is why I should have got those noise-cancelling headphones. I knew it.
The thing is, I know I'm the fire warden, but, it's my... And I'm the one who's supposed to look after the situations in a fire. But I just think I'll deal with the fire better if I've finished. It's just one of those things I have about finishing something off. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just the way I am. I'm a completer.
It's one of the reasons that I got on the International Space Station in the first place.
As the fire warden.
As the fire warden. I'm the one who...
Dressed in a full Fireman Sam style outfit.
I'm the one with the full Fireman Sam outfit.
I've been a fire warden in schools, hospitals. Yep. I've done it in the private sector. And finally, I got the space gig.
Sure.
but I have a way of working.
Yeah.
Please, respect that.
It's how I do things. And honestly, it will backfire if I don't get to finish the letter section.
I know this is an oxygen-rich environment and that the fire is travelling at a rate at which no one has seen before on Earth. But nonetheless.
Yep. And I realise that the flames are eating through the hull. It's extraordinary. It's like getting a pat of butter and sticking a grenade in it, isn't it? The speed with which it's just eating through that hull like it isn't there. I realise that.
But I do like this lukewarm banter.
I do like this lukewarm banter. And I do have a bucket of sand with me. So I think we're going to be okay.
And I know let's face it, we've done the drills. We know we meet in the car park.
We queue outside in alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order. And I think the biggest challenge is going to be counting all your heads before they explode.
Meanwhile, quiet, please. Let me just finish the podcast.
And so, yes, so Howard wants a Royal Talk jingle. I think this is quite a good idea. I think he's right.
It's a good
shout. We do tend to reference the Royals quite a lot. Not because, I mean, I just want to make it clear that I'm not some kind of royalist, but it's we seem to grasp for the Royals quite a lot.
They are, whether or not we approve of them, they are our masters.
That's true.
Aren't they? Do you know what I mean?
Like, we are their subjects.
We are their subjects. And... you know, you can complain about them all you like, but the fact is we are their vassals and that any of us would lay down our lives for any one of them.
Yeah. So let's just discuss what's going to be in the jingle, because I'll knock it up this week. So ready for next week's episode. So maybe we'll go for the old, if you suggest some genres, maybe.
Well, I think I think the Queen is famously a fan of bebop.
Bebop jazz.
So I'd offer that up. Yeah. It should probably be a bebop vibe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Already feeling hard. Henry, would you like to add anything else into that mix of gumbo?
The only thing, just to make it a little bit easier for you, would be if you could give it a sort of bedding in 80s synth pop. Okay. So yeah, we want some bebop and some 80s synth pop.
Okay, and now I just need some kind of bits of, vocals to
all stand for the king.
We're entering the regal zone.
That was great.
Feel the smooth plush velvet coating of the regal zone.
The chat is dead. Long live the chat.
Doff thy hat and doff thy trousers to the king.
Off with their heads. On with the show.
Oh, I like it.
Very nice.
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Advisors, bring me more advisors.
Final email. Charlie Nevitt emails. Hi, Beans.
Hi, Charlie.
I threw this together. The production is quite rough, but enjoy. And Charlie has sent us our theme tune to play us out this week.
Yes. Yes.
Bring it on.
Thank you, Charlie.
I would say the genre, I'm not really up on the metal world, but I would say the genre is maybe thrash with a hint of death metal, maybe.
Nice.
It's very, very good. Thank you, Charlie, for sending us that. Also, Mike, it sounds to me as if he's drop D tuning with the guitar. So he's taking the E string, he's dropping that to a D, because then he's got that chugging sound at the bottom.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I'm editing this week's episode, so I will be just slowly lowering the volume and just fading out on you guys talking about guitar stuff, because I don't approve of it as a conversation topic. Okay. I've made that clear.
Mike, so Charlie hasn't told us what kind of guitar he's using. I'd imagine something, maybe a Flying V or something like that.
It could be, couldn't it? Nice big fat humbuckers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.